For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, I'm Justin King, and welcome to the Blue Chip Academy. As a five-star recruit, all Big Ten corner, NFL vet, and Power 5 recruiting coordinator, I understand the emotions that go along with the recruiting process. The Blue Chip Academy is here to provide education, critical insights, and mentorship through the recruiting process for families and athletes alike. When athletes and their families have proper education and guidance, they're able to make better decisions and set themselves up for long-term success. Blue Chip Academy provides the resources and information that empowers athletes to create their own Blue Chip blueprint and take ownership of their careers. Blue Chip Academy exists because when athletes and their families are armed with the right information, they're able to make the decisions for themselves that positively impact their future. Again, I'll be your host, Justin King, and welcome to Blue Chip Academy. Yeah, welcome back to the Blue Chip Academy podcast, empowering the next generation of leaders by equipping them with a detailed blueprint to success while using sports as our catalyst. Got another special guest, former D1 basketball player and coach and founder of Catalyst and Brandme, a branding firm for athletes and entertainers. Let's welcome Lil Cuz, Jamie Smith. Welcome on, man.
What's going on, Cuz? How you feeling?
Man, you can't call it, man. Blessed. Happy that you're able to jump on, man. Give your perspective on this whole sports ecosystem, man. As somebody that, you know, we grew up together and all these different things, so you had a lot of different experiences and perspectives on this whole ecosystem, man. So just tell the people a little bit about your background, man, where you're from, and, yeah, let's jump into it.
Yeah, a prodigy of Western PA sports at its finest, and growing up watching the greats from Aliquippa and the dynasty of Gateway, which you helped create, and, you know, watching, just seeing things develop, going from, you know, nothing to something, and then seeing the effects even years later of all the athletes that I got a chance to watch. Always being the younger one, because I surrounded myself with you guys and greatness. And so, I don't know, I just think my standard has just been set at such a bar, constantly trying to chase that. You know what I'm saying? It's hard to do, but, and I'd be lying. I mean, maybe I'm biased, but I still haven't seen that level of excellence in Western PA sports. But, you know, that could be a different conversation. But I just think that the excellence, that bar that was set is just it's created who I am today and made me, you know, position myself to shoot and strive for that, whether it be coaching, recruiting, branding, whatever it is, even just networking and building relationships. I think I learned that from, you know, Terry Smith, Uncle Terry.
I was definitely
a high school coach bringing in Charlie Weiss. I mean, I was just like, and that's back when Charlie Weiss was
the guy.
I mean, he was like a god. Yeah.
Coming in with the rings, like, oh, no, here's my, yeah, like, look at this. I'm like, man, nah, that's funny. That's real. Because we talk about a lot where that exposure, right? Exposure kind of sets the bottom of what you expect. And like your expectations or whatever you're exposed to kind of determines the route that you're going to go on and the path that you want to trek down. And it's interesting, like we talk about a lot of people that came through that Gateway time frame when T was building it up and we were all kind of coming up playing sports and doing different things of that nature. Like you said, you had a very interesting perspective on the recruiting process and as a recruit yourself, right? Getting recruited as a D1 basketball player, coming up, playing hoops. So take me through a little bit about, you know, your just athletic journey, just entering into the sports realm. I know you had that unique exposure of seeing it up close and personal with like your older cousins and brother, right? Everybody going D1, T building the program. I mean, we all play sports together, but then it was your turn to kind of come through as a prospect. What were your expectations and how did you approach the recruiting process?
Yeah, I kind of felt left out there alone kind of because I felt like as a female, I kind of had to like create my own path, and you guys, you know, collectively had just such a, I don't know, you guys did so much, and the work collectively, like you as the star player, Uncle Terry as the coach, you know, Aaron, you know, hit the positions he played. I mean, like all of you guys collectively. And then I'm like, well, here I am. Like, why do I have to play basketball? You know what I'm saying? I'm like, I got to play basketball. So I felt like you guys set the bar so high, there was really no option. Like, I had to go D1, and I didn't think about nothing else. Like, that was it. And so I knew that I wasn't going to get, like, the exposure and all the, like, you know, all those cool things that come along with, like, I think, like, being just, like, a football star in Western PA. But basketball is pretty big, too. But we know, like, the Darrell Revises and the Terrell Pryors, they played both sports, but ultimately they went and played football. And I think, like, that was always the thing for me. And so I just knew I always kind of wanted to funnel myself back to the football world one way or another. But basketball kind of led me on my own path, obviously, to get the degree and whatnot. But even in college, I mean, playing basketball, I was still at the football practices and I was talking to the football coaches, you know what I'm saying? Just to like kind of pick their brain, because it's just such a machine. Football is such a machine, you know, and then it's such a team sport. It fascinates me. And basketball, your coach cannot like you, but it's five of us out here. And once I get the rock clear, I'm doing my thing. And football, you got to depend on this person to do their job and that person. I mean, I think that it's just, it's a phenomenal, you know, just, I think it gives you a real perspective of life. You know what I'm saying?
You're hitting on a
real. You got to depend on some people sometimes that you may not want to, you may not really believe in, but I don't know. Football fascinates me. I don't know how y'all do it.
No, you're hitting on a real point, man. Like when you just called it a machine, I think people don't realize that it is a machine. Even when we talk about, you know, we talk about on the field, there's 22 players at a time, right? But even off the field, I think a lot of people that just view the game, right? We always talk about head coaching hires or people that get jobs. I'm like, realize that, yo, you know, there's like 60 people behind them that kind of make everything operate, from the operations to the recruiting to the graphics. Yeah. It's like a full blown corporation. And then you have to mix in the personalities when you're recruiting. So you build a team. You can't just build it based off of talent, because you have to have guys, like you said, that are willing to kind of put themselves on the line. You have to have like-minded individuals. And it's almost better to have a group of guys that have the same type of thread line or mentality through with the left talent to kind of get over the hump versus just a pure talent, right? When you talk about basketball, I'm sure chemistry and things work. And I mean, it's obviously in basketball, you need chemistry, but like you're just talking about the machine and all the moving parts in football, it's pretty vast. When you got into the recruiting process as a prospect, I mean, you had a unique viewpoint. Like you said, you saw the coaches like Nick Saban, Charlie Weiss coming in from just being around and guys getting recruited. What did you recognize? Was there any difference in the basketball process than the football process when you were going through it?
Yeah. The budget ain't the same. So, you know what I'm saying? You got to think, I'm spoiled. Like, you had Joe Paterno at my basketball game, high school basketball game. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, he's recruiting you, and Joe Paterno end up at my basketball game. And so it's just, that's how things work in football. Like, they're going to give it. I mean, the recruiting world is literally just as, if not more important than the actual on the field X and O's. And basketball, it's more so like, it's a million kids out here that play basketball. Like, we want you, come on down. You know what I'm saying? And then you got to think too, I mean, women's basketball. And so, I mean, it was highly competitive at that time, I think, in Western PA. And I think I was the baddest out there. I still think I'm the baddest. I ain't seen nobody hoop like me yet.
Talk to him, Jay.
You know what I'm saying? But you know, it's I didn't have, our family is more football based. And so we didn't have those, like being able to make calls or anything like that. So all of these people, I'm kind of like meeting for the first time. But I think the difference, what I seen, and you know, when I became a coach, what inspired me was I had big offers and I was committing every week. I mean, I committed to West Virginia. I took a visit to West Virginia. I committed to them my sophomore year. Then I committed to Miami. Then I committed to Miami and Ohio State at the same time. They both dropped me. So, you know what I'm saying? I'm kind of like figuring things out. And then, you know, I ended up just going mid-major because I wanted to be able to do what I wanted to do. And what attracted me was authenticity. And so, and originality. And so all the coaches kind of seem to have the same, like, all right, we're going to send you one letter, one handwritten letter a week. We'll come and visit you on your senior night. No, nothing really stood out to me. But then I had a coach at St. Peter's. Her name was Kalisha Lewis. And she just called me and was like, listen, I know you committed to wherever you committed to. I'm going to tell you like this. You ain't going to get all that splashy stuff here. If you come here, it just means you want a ball. You know what I'm saying? If you want a ball, I'm going to give you the rock, and I'm going to see what you're going to do. And just that conversation, I'll never forget, because I called that other school, and I was like, I'm not coming there no more. And it was a school on a different level, and I chose that school. And so, and then when I got in trouble, when, you know, you're transitioning and developing and finding yourself in college, so I should have been kicked out of school a couple times, you know, just being young, dumb, and making mistakes. But Kalisha Lewis, that was her word. She told me she was going to mentor me and that she was going to be there off the court for me. And she did that, you know what I'm saying? And so now when she ended up going her separate ways and then I got hurt is when I transferred. But I knew becoming a coach, the advantage I had was being authentic, being original. And I wasn't trying to sell anything. I just wanted the recruits to know, like, listen, I've been there and you probably have not done half the stuff that I've done, like, as far as like being deserving of getting kicked out of school. So there's nothing that you're going to do that I'm not going to, that I haven't seen and that I probably can't help you get out of, you know what I'm saying? But I'm going to be here for you. And I'm a player's coach. You know what I'm saying? And so I think that the advantage I had, honestly, because from day one, I went from Division III and I immediately got a job offer in Division I before the season was over.
Right.
And it was because I had Division I and Division II kids coming to Alfred, New York, and nobody could figure it out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so immediately that nearby D1, which was Niagara University, called me and was like, we need you up here, like, now. You know what I'm saying?
No, so, that's you bring up a good point, man, when you talk about the, when you mentioned the authenticity from the coach and the originality. Because I think when you go through the recruiting process, experiencing things, and then you transition over, I mean, I think those are some real life lessons that you learn, because you're going through, man, you're getting praised, you're getting denied, you're trying to make a decision, and you're like, all right, what has attracted me to this school? You can use those same things when you transition over. I think that was what made me a really good, you know, recruiting coordinator at Penn State, was to be able, like, how to recruit. Like you said, I wasn't selling anything. It was just like being authentic and trying to give game, to be honest with you, going through the process.
Yep.
And even when and that was something that happened to me. Like, I mean, when I was going through, you know, I committed to Florida, right? Like, everybody talks about that.
Yeah.
I committed to Florida, you know, when Zook and those guys were there, Coach Loxley and all them. And, you know, the AD lied to me to my face, and you went back to the drawing board. You're like, all right, well, who's been honest? Who's been recruiting me with like some authenticity? And it was like, oh, Joe, Penn State. Mm-hmm. It was just consistent. And at the time they were losing. And so for them, they kind of had that same mentality. Like, look, man, you ain't going, we're not doing all this. We're not doing all that, but we want you here. We got a plan for you. This is what we're going to do for you. And it was just that from 13 years old before my ninth grade year all the way until the end. And I'm just like, well, they were honest the whole time. So I mean, maybe that's the type of, they always recruited from a position of power, right? Like, you've been around people who were like needy. It was like, oh, please, like, blah, 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 like, or just like begging. Yep. And I'm like, I mean, maybe for some players that's enticing, but like, I thought for like the top players or just me in general, or, and then we talk about the identity of a team. A lot of people on my Penn State team, when I got there, were like that. It was just kind of no fluff guys. We're just like, nah, we want the real and we want to win. And so, like, trying to identify that when I transitioned out, even going through the process when I got to the NFL, like, looking at guys, like, because I always wanted to be a general manager, like, looking at guys, like, all right, what makes him great? All right, what makes this guy great? What makes this dude great? It's like, all right, that's athletic ability. But, like, the ones that were going to the Pro Bowl, man, cats ticked a little different. You know what I mean? And you can kind of see that and then how you approach them. So, like, even when I went into recruiting at Penn State, whether it was recruiting Michael Parsons, Brisker, or anybody, it was like just trying to be as real as possible and not give too much fluff because the cream always rises if you have something to offer. So that's interesting when you take different situations from your recruiting process as a prospect that you transition and then use to be successful on the other end. So that's pretty impressive by you. So can you talk about a little bit when you say like you're about to get kicked out of school? Like, what can you talk about little mishaps that you had? Maybe just one, not too many, not too crazy.
Yeah, I got to think. Well, St. Peter's, the first school I went to, we had our freshman class was, they brought in five. So Kalisha Lewis, she was the recruiting guru, you know, and she brought in five kids from like the inner city, and it kind of shook the program up a little bit, and we all fit five positions. So I was the one. Sakara was the two. We had Rebecca, who was the shooter, the three. We had Janae, four, and then Key, five. So what they would do was, the upperclassmen hated us because we walked in from day one, and I'm like, I'm not cleaning y'all stuff. I'm not doing y'all laundry, and I want this locker. And right. We kind of got, like, the benefit because, like the coaches didn't know how to react to it. The players was pissed because they're mad at the coaches now because, like, yo, y'all going to let them – yeah, because they've never been challenged like that. And I was the leader. I was the leader of the Aces. We called ourselves the Aces. But every day, our coaches, the way that they reacted to it was, it would be the rest of the team. So we had about 16, 17 players on the team total. It was five of us. And so our coach would roll the ball out and say, freshmen versus the rest of the team. If y'all don't like them, beat them. And so we was just thrashing them chicks. I'm going to repost this. They know. They're going to see this too to this day. You know what I'm saying? It's just, it is what it is. They couldn't see us.
Right.
And we had a chemistry. We liked each other. And so, but you know, that competitive nature. I mean, I grew up with y'all. I grew up, you know what I'm saying? Like where I was rough. I wanted, was setting screens. I was running through the screen. Right. And you know, it got kind of physical. And one day one of the girls got mad and, you know, I had just finger rolled on her forehead, and then I threw the ball at her back, and she threw the ball back, and I threw it back, and then she started charging me, and then, you know, I just rocked her
right
and on the middle of the court, and you can't do that. And so, you know, my coach started yelling at me, and I was like, man, fuck all this. I said, give me my sign my papers. I'm transferring. Y'all are, you know, y'all are soft around here. And I had a thing where my head coach would give me 30 minutes and she would say, Jamie, go to the locker room. And she would give me 30 minutes. But after a while, it kind of, because then, you know, I was late to class from staying out too late. And that's just freshman behavior, not knowing how to manage being free. And then, you know, growing up in a closed-in environment, you know what I'm saying, where, you know, you had to sneak to kind of do things, I was living. And so, you know, in Jersey City at the time, I mean, it was everything. We got stipends. I ain't need nothing. I wasn't calling home at all. I was good. So,
I'm straight.
You know, I got into it with a couple of the men's basketball players. I think the volleyball coach got me suspended because I was shooting. And the volleyball team was trash at the time, and they wanted the center court. But I was working out. I just pulled my pants down.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So the whole team had to run for it, and I didn't care. You know, I had that kind of behavior. I was just nasty. I was, yeah, and, you know, I was there to play basketball and nothing else. But, you know, eventually things changed. But
what do you think that came from? Like, where do you think you came in with that? Like, I'm not begging. I'm not asking any part. I'm not asking any excuse me. There's no beg your pardons over here. I'm coming in. This is my show. Yeah. Like, because I've seen that attitude in a sense of, I mean, even when I got to Penn State and then the class after me came, like, they came in with, like, just a, I don't care who's here. Like, this is our show. Like, Navarro, yeah. Jared Ardrick and them. But, like, when I got to Penn State, you know, me and Derek, it was kind of like we were, like, the big stars, right? So we had special privileges. Like, we got to stay in the apartments the first. We never stayed in dorms. And we heard the rumblings. Like, there were older players that were pissed off about it. And I got a funny story about Kirk Dill, man. What's up, Kirk? But, you know, Scrap promised me number one, like, when I was coming out of high school. You know, it's like, man, I bet. Like, I'm coming up there. I got the apartment. Like, all my – everything that I'm preaching on Blue Chip Academy, guys, about, like, when you have leverage, how to use it. Like, I was doing that back in, like, 03, 04. But anyway, and I got to the when I got to Penn State my first day, I remember I was coming from the All-American game. Moved into my apartment. Oh, bet, bet. So I go to the equipment room, and Kirk's like, yo, your number, we got to talk about the number. I'm like, man, we said number one. Like, that's what it is. So, like, you know, I'm the freshman in there, and he's like, look, so number one is Anwar Phillips. He's a fifth-year senior, and, like, there's, like, all the seniors is, like, in this corner. It's, like, him, Mike, Rob, AZ, everybody. I'm just kind of, you know, I'm a new pup, 17 coming in mid-year. He's like, no, so you can have number one. It's yours. You just got to go tell him that you're taking it from him. Or, he's like, or you can wear number seven for 6 months, and then you can switch over to number one. I was like, man, give me number seven, dog. Let me just let me be a good teammate, man. Get me all messed up in here. Now, that's an interesting thing, but just going in with that attitude, I was just wondering, where did you think that, like, not begging any pardons came from?
Yeah, I mean, and even with the Aces group, with that, with our freshman crew, I took that attitude with them too. Like, Sakara House was supposed to be, me and her were interchangeable with the one and two, but I was the dog, and I felt like this was going to be my team. And I from day one, you know, when people ask, oh, so you going to be the point guard? I'm like, oh, that's me. That's me. She got the two. You know what I'm saying? Like, even that type of attitude.
Where did that confidence come from? I mean, you were always confident, but where do you think that came from?
But it came from y'all. I mean, growing up, and there's no way. I didn't play with girls. I did not play with girls.
That's true.
I played with boys, and not regular boys. Like, y'all were, you know what I'm saying, the best of what y'all did. So there's no way I'm coming in here with these chicks, and I'm about to play with them. It's just not going to happen. And I think overall they haven't. Women's basketball doesn't see that at all. You know what I'm saying? So it took for me to get to Morgan State where that culture was kind of already embedded. And, you know, we weren't so much as friends at Morgan State. It was like a business, and we all did our own thing off the court. But on the court, you know what I'm saying, it was that competition. It was, I mean, you're talking about all black kids.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And so we were all competing. Like, I wanted to be the first to the shower. And then I was going to be, if I seen somebody I was competing with walking to the door, I'm getting to the door first. Like, every little thing. Like, I mean, it was just, you know, you get, it's kind of obsessive behavior it that is. You get. And then, and I think you have to, like, unlearn that a little bit when you get in real life. Because people call you, I've been called crazy my whole life, but I don't care, because if I want to get something done, that's what, like, that's just, you know me, cuz I'm like, I'm gonna do it one way or another, and right. Then I'll handle the repercussions later.
Do you think that attitude helps you identify, and from a coaching standpoint? So, like, let's take it to the other side. Now you're coaching. How did you handle players that might have had an attitude, not even an attitude, but, like, the confidence that you did or kind of walked, whether it was just like, kind of like, man, I don't care if I elbow you here or here, like, I'm coming through. Like, how did you handle that as a coach? Because I think that is a, just before we get started, I think that is a benefit for coaches to have. Because even when I transition over, you see certain things in players, like, oh, I know how to manage that, or I know what that is. Yep. You know what I mean? So, like, how did you handle that as a coach?
And that's an advantage, right? Because, like, these other coaches aren't used to really coaching that. Talent. For real. Like, they'll see it, but then they want to get rid of that kid. Or that's a problem child. No, that's not. I'm educated. I knew what was going on. Now, if all it took was for a coach to, you know what I'm saying, like, kind of pull me to the side, like, yo, make sure we gearing out the right way. Make sure you're putting that in the right, you know what I'm saying, that type of thing. But instead, it kind of, a mark was put on me as, like, don't mess with Jamie because she's, like, she's a firehead. When really, I wasn't. Like, At Morgan, I didn't necessarily get in trouble off the court. I was just a diehard competitor on the court. And so I was the captain my first day there. I became the captain. And I would stop practice like, I wouldn't need the coaches to stop practice. I would stop practice. If we were starting off too slow, I'm stopping practice and we're starting over. I didn't care to make friends like that. Mm-hmm. But I had that respect. And so, like, it becoming a coach, you do not see that anymore. And I think that's what kind of threw me off, because I'm like, you want to see that every now and then from a player, or a little hint of it in one of them. And then I try to use that. When I see a hint of it in one or two of the athletes, I kind of try to pull that out of them. You know what I'm saying?
I love that you say that, because that's like when I'm evaluating coaches, or even going through coaches, or just having conversations, like, you'll hear coaches that get jobs and then they think, get that head coaching job. It's like, oh, I got to, there's this character thing, character. Da, da, da. I'm like, man, it's competitiveness first. Then you go to the character, because it all kind of trickles down.
Yep.
But what you're talking about is like a level of talent management. Like, I think that's something that gets undersold so much for coaches, that's a part of your job. Like, you got to manage talent. And when you deal with talent, it's different. We'll get into it, because you deal with athletes and musicians. So you're dealing with different personalities that you got to have. You have to have a level of emotional intelligence to deal with it, right? And so, like talent management, I mean, depending on where coaches come from, if they've never seen a player that's kind of rough around the edges but elite on the field, like, I don't want to coach that because he might not do what I say, or I have to deal with this. And, like, that's your job, bro. Like, as a coach, like, that is your job. I mean, there was players, I'm not going to bring up exactly who, but, you know, their guys thought they were, like, bad people. And I'm like,
yeah,
oh, he's making you feel insecure, like, because he's super confident, because, like, he's not bad. Like, I've seen like, real goblins out this joint, and, like, that's not it. You know what I mean? So being able to manage that from a standpoint, you see it with Nick Saban, you see it, you see it with Bill Belichick, you see it with a lot of great coaches that have, especially the ones that have that hard exterior, that, like, oh, they're just a drill sergeant, and people try to mimic that. But then you start going back, like, wait, Bill Parcells coached LT Taylor. Yeah, Lawrence Taylor. He coached Lawrence Taylor. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Nick Saban. He has a whole bunch of different players that come in there. And, like, the beauty is that they build a culture that those things can't exist, right? Where the culture kind of brings, because I think that's a misconception at Penn State, is that everybody were choir boys because of, you know, the clean cut, can't have long hair, short facial hair. But it was like, we had goons on the team. It was just like, people knew how to maneuver and give a little bit of room. I think the Steelers do a great job with just talent management. But when I got to the other side, you start seeing like that. Oh, that's where people are losing it. Like, they're afraid of, like, no, this player is better. Like, it's not, I don't care about you feeling comfortable around. Like, you got to figure out how to coach to get the best out of that guy. And that's when you get to the whole saying of the X and O's coaches versus the Jimmy's and Joe's coaches. Right. So that's a very interesting point.
I think it's, they're all necessary, but in basketball, you don't have as many, you don't have position coaches. Mm. So it's, you can't say, I'm just going to do this X and O's. Like, in basketball, you have to, it's like a player. You got to play both sides. You got to be well-rounded. And I think the major thing that you hit on was insecurities. And I think that's why a lot of coaches are uncomfortable with me. And so it's almost like I'm still playing, because when I played, I made my teammates and coaches uncomfortable. And then when I coached, I made them uncomfortable, because when the players are making them uncomfortable because of their insecurities, Jay, there are not a lot of coaches out here, especially on a D1 level, that are secure with themselves. I mean, as a coach, not even just a coach, but as a person.
Yeah.
And one thing that my high school coach, Corey Morton, taught me, she it was simple. She said, Jamie, I'm never going to tell you really what to do, but if you could take one thing from me, never be coached or work for someone who does not have a family, kids, or married. And I just thought she was nuts when she said that. And I'm like, and it's literally like, if you think about it, like a lot of these coaches, you know, it becomes their life. And so therefore now it's not about the kids no more. It's not about the players. It's not about this. It's about their ego. And, you know, those titles give them that. But really within themselves, they are not that. And so when you get a player that's flashy or talks some shit, you know what I'm saying? Or challenges a coach, you know, especially nowadays too, the players want to know why.
Right.
Well, why am I running off that screen when I could come? Why am I going off the top when I can go, you know what I'm saying, when I could slip? If you don't know the answer, you going to get mad. Everybody get on the line. Don't ask me that. That's not cool. That's not the player being talking back and things like that. Like, I mean, if you know what's going on. And so then someone like me is like, here, come here. You know what I'm saying? And then we go chop it up. Now, a good head coach is going to take that. And because I think coming into coaching D1, I didn't want to be a head coach. And I don't know if I ever really thought of being a head coach. I kind of always wanted to be that assistant coach that had that relationship and bond with the kids that, you know what I'm saying, that was there for them, that helped change their lives. And like how I call Kalisha Lewis, like, she made a difference for me. I'll never forget her. I don't remember the other coaches. You know what I'm saying? And like having that impact, because the money's not there for women's college basketball.
You hit on something that's really insightful when you said that you didn't want to become a head coach, but you wanted to be that coach that was there for the players. I think that's a very profound statement, because I think when you want to become a head coach, it's so intentional in going about certain things a certain way, how you look to the administration, who you're trying to make connections with. It almost you have to move in a certain type of roadmap versus when you're coming in. And a lot of black coaches do like want to make impacts. I mean, coaches in general want to make impacts on student athletes' lives, but like the core competency of doing that is so different than the responsibilities of a head coach. Right. Because like a head coach, you're like a CEO, you're running stuff and almost have to be disassociated a little bit to the player. I mean, to the players, even from myself at the XFL, when we were overseeing, when I had to evaluate guys like Bob Stoops, Pep Hamilton, like how their operations, right? Yeah. It's like, oh, snap. Like, this is like, yeah, you're coaching, but like there's a completely different vibe from them and a position coach that's like real close to the players and like really there for them in that standpoint. So I thought that's an interesting thing, because you can see the coaches in the ecosystem or just in the serious athletic world who are trying to become head coaches, and ones that are really just, I want to say, be where your feet are and just like in it for the kids or in it to continue to move up. But I mean, not that one way is right or wrong, but it's just the impact that they do have. Right. So
exactly.
I think that was one of the things that made my sensor real delicate or real sensitive going through the process. Cause you know, he was real as they came. He was super confident and he was like real. So it was like, not even challenging him, but like, if I was like, man, why didn't you give me the ball? Like right there, like da da da. Like, and then one time he did and I didn't get it. He's like, well, why didn't you get in? I gave you the ball. Like that was like the back and forth that I was used to in high school. Yeah. So like that's how I like operated. Like how he coached me was like very like not in a peer way, but it was like, yo, like this is what we're gonna do. Like, and it was like with a lot of confidence. So anytime I went through the through the process and I ran into coaches that didn't have that, like, yeah, that's bullshit. Nope, that's BS. Nope.
Yep.
So I had that same thing with coaches too. So
it's hard, but I got a question for you though, because like with that being said, like I felt that way just being a female. I just feel like I just seen so much more than my teammates and even the coaches. And so a lot of times there weren't very many coaches that could coach me because I was coaching myself. And they did not like that. Now, I was, you know, I listened to the plays and whatnot, but I worked hard and I proved myself in the film room and stuff to be able to call my own plays and do my own thing like that. But at the same time, it's like, I think I learned more like strategy and prep and stuff from those coaches. But X's and O's and, you know what I'm saying, competitiveness and things like that. I mean, I learned from y'all, from Uncle Terry, and just seeing all of that. So I don't know for you, I know I got in trouble a lot because I just didn't believe nothing they were saying. It wasn't making sense. You know what I'm saying? Where did that come from? Who raised you? Where did you play? Like, you know what I'm saying? I needed something because of how we were raised. You know what I'm saying? Like it was just so authentic and real. And like you said, you could have the back and forth, like, and then me as a girl, I could sit in a room with all of y'all and I could give my opinion and y'all would listen and get, it wasn't like I was different, you know what I'm saying? But then you get in the real world and then in certain rooms, like, oh, Jamie, you can't talk. So I ran into that issue a lot, but I know like someone like you made it to the highest of heights, you know what I'm saying? And then, you know what I'm saying, coming back into it, like, how do you kind of humble yourself? Or I guess, like, to, I don't know, because the kids now...
There's a level of showing humility, right?
They know who you are, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
There's a level
or know how great you were.
Yeah, so that's what's cool about it. Like, me, I think I had the same issues, like, right? When I got to Penn State, I used to get into it with the weight room staff because I was like, man, what's this high-intensity stuff? Like, I do explosive stuff. So, like, even in college, Terry was still kind of my coach, right? Like, I used to do workouts that I did on the Saturdays. Like, we talked to Jeremy, like, oh, we need to do this, this, and this. I was watching film. Like, him and Metz would get me film from, like, Champ, Revis, and all these guys, D'Angelo mm-hmm. Hall. So, like, I was watching that film because we ran a basic cover three single high safety. So we're like shy shuffling. I was just more athletic. So I was like looking for more in-depth coaching. So like I was still getting that. And I mean, I do think that sometimes it rubs coaches the wrong way, especially if someone's getting information that's a little bit more in tune and like it's kind of worked, yeah. right? Because like, again, like I think that was one of my biggest, one of my most, like the strongest advantages was understanding the game coming out of high school. Like mm-hmm. me from Uncle Harvey, from my pops, and then getting there, like, it was hard to listen to BS. Like, I just, like, I mean, I've been yeah. shot so real all the time that, like, anything that was fake was, like you can't just say that to me. You know what I mean? Like, we got to mm-hmm. talk about it. And the same thing happened when I got to the NFL. It was better in the NFL because, you know, everybody's grown men and it's, like, back and forth. So, like, the professionalism of even going back and forth. I would go up on Tuesday and I was the player. What's up, CeeLo? But, like, me and CeeLo, we sit down. He would kind of go over like the installs with me to see like, is he explaining it right for everybody else to get it? Like if you have a problem with it, if you don't have a problem with it, then we can make sure everybody else gets it. Like, am I explaining this right? Like, how is it connected? So like, I even played that role when I got there. When it really hit me in the face is when I tried to transition out and all those different experiences and my unique viewpoints did not add up or I didn't get credit for it. And then I was just kind of looked at it as an athlete. That's when I think the real chip came on my shoulder. Like when I was like, oh, yeah. hold up. I've been doing this like for a long time. And I've been around some real guys that have been giving me real game, whether it's like you said, growing up watching, I was like, I grew up watching like Josh, I grew up watching different people like Josh mm-hmm. Slayer, cause Al Clipper and just seeing the whole Al Clipper thing go up with Reeve, everybody talking about him doing stuff. So there was like that level of like, no, this is what we do. Even Chucky, like when I'm in college, you know, Chucky's now, he's an agent at Roc Nation, but back then Chucky was a scout for the Seahawks and somewhere else. But I wanted to be a general manager. We would talk about players. Like, this is how that won't work. This is what worked. This is how you break down a player from this point to that point, this point. And this was like the whole time. So like in the off seasons, I mean, I'm with all the scouts. Like, you know what I'm saying? When I'm in college, like I'm talking to them, getting to know them, like, and just from being a little cousin, like that was like our makeup. So when I transitioned out, and didn't give all the credit for that. I think I had a chip on my shoulder and just like listening to people. But then it was more, went to corporate America first. So I learned a little bit. I think that was a great thing for me going into corporate America because I had to lean on some humility because I didn't know everything. Yeah. Right. So I had to like lean on my strengths. Like, all right, I know I can do this. I know I'm smart. I know I can talk to people. But the actual tactical stuff of selling, getting someone to do this, mm-hmm. to learn and pivot, like I was open to learn it. So once I kind of combined, you know, my football stuff, like corporate America stuff and came back into football, I was a different beast. I think the time in corporate America kind of molded me a little different. Like, cause mm-hmm. I mean, I think I told the story before, but I remember the first time somebody CC'd me on an email, man, like I approached them. Like I was like, bro, like we talked about this. Like what you putting me on an email for? Like what is that? Like, and I was like, I'm just not, like, no, I say something. You don't trust me. Like, are you telling on me?
Yeah.
So I bought, like, I didn't, and that's when I realized, like, well, dang, if I'm tripping that's like this, game. I know some other cats that, anyway, but that's how I kind of dealt with it. Like, there was different aspects of humility. And I think players that transition off the field into coaching or into personnel need to have that as well, because being a player is not the same as being a coach. Like, even if you know the different X and O's and, you know, things of that nature, I think it's different when you get to the NFL. You play for a certain amount of time because you're spending so much time on it that you're picking up stuff naturally. But just when you're a coach, man, you're an executive. Like when they're judging you that way, even if you see guys walking around in sweatsuits, like there's real study time. Like these guys are putting in 13 to 15 hour days and they have to be able to trust to do that. Yeah. And I think that's where sometimes players need to understand there is a there's a level of humility when you're transitioning out, whether you're getting into personnel, whether you're getting into coaching, whether you're getting into anything in the game, that you had a specific critical unique view, but like there's some other views that you can pick up faster. But once you have that humility and kind of soften where the information is coming in, you can kind of bypass everybody that's kind of head start on you. Like that's the thing.
Yeah.
If you don't, I think you kind of become stagnant. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Blue Chip Academy. To help navigate the recruiting waters, LIG Sports Group put together a Blue Chip recruiting checklist. Download your checklist at ligsports.com/bluechipacademy to ensure you're making informed decisions through this process. Hit subscribe and check out the LIG Sports Group Football Ops and Recruiting YouTube channel, where we'll talk about the recruiting and other critical points in the football ecosystem. If you're feeling stressed, confused, or just want help putting together a blue chip blueprint for you and your son, don't hesitate to book a consult call with me at ligsports.com/bluechipacademy. Remember, everyone has a different journey. Keep sharpening and remember that you can only go to one school. Just make sure that you have your blue chip blueprint together and execute it. Life is good.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.